Thank you. Thank you. Okay, good. So you can hear me? We hadn't done a microphone test. All right, so I'm the only thing that stands between you and happy hour. So just as long as we have that clear. No pressure. So Google Wave. Let's start with an overview. There's been a lot of press on Google Wave, so hopefully I won't have to go into too much of a background on it. We released this a little while ago. Google Wave is a collaborative communication environment. It started out with a really simple question of what would email look like if it was invented today? Right? What would the underlying technology choices be? How would it look? How would it operate? And so back at Google I.O. in May of this year, we released a developer preview of Google Wave. And that's what you're seeing right here. It is a, instead of this idea of email where you send messages back and forth between each other, every conversation is a collaboratively edited document so that you invite people to a Wave, they can add their bits to the conversation, everybody can modify the document, that document evolves over time, and you can see how it evolves. So the interface here looks similar to a lot of other Google products. You've got your inbox on the left-hand side, your controls about how you're going to search and look through all of your Waves. You have your contacts in the lower left-hand side. Those are your people that you're going to be waving with. The search results are that center column, and on the right-hand side is a Wave. And as you can see, it's more than just a simple text medium, right? There's text there, there's markup, there's images, and gadgets, right? So there's a lot of functionality that can go on within Wave. If you've seen the video, a lot of people focus on the collaborative editing aspects of it, and you can see multiple people's carrots moving over the screen at the same time where they're editing text. Like I said, it's more though than just a collaborative editing environment as such, where it's just text that's being edited. And really the rest of this talk is going to be talking about kind of the plumbing underneath, how that collaboration takes place, the technology stack that's involved, and federation, what we're doing with federation and how federation works. So to split that off, we need to differentiate between Google Wave as a product versus Wave as a technology. Google Wave is this thing, this front end that we've built, our instance of it is Google Wave. Compare that to the underlying Wave technology, right? And the analogy is Wave is to Google Wave as email is to Gmail, right? There's an underlying technology bit there that isn't our implementation. So, and the important part of that gets to federation. So what is federation? It's a technology that enables this picture, right? We have, Google Wave has their Wave provider. You go there, you log in, you have your Waves. It enables the ability for you to start a conversation and then invite people that are not on that server, who are on federated Wave servers, into that same exact conversation and participate in real time, like you've seen in all the demos. So here we have Acme Wave and Initech Wave, and they're federating with Google Wave. And yes, we really did register initech-corp.com, and we have a Wave server set up on it. So I love this company. So the federation aspect of Google Wave, two points are it is open and it is iterating, okay? We have published the specifications, written them up, draft specifications of what we have so far about how we believe federation should work. We have published those. They're available under a very liberal patent license. And we're iterating in that we don't believe we have it down yet. It's not perfect. We're putting it out there. We're hoping other people build implementations. We are publishing our own open source Java implementation and now working with the community to get nodes federating and seeing what issues arise and seeing how that works and evolving those specifications as we go through and get that feedback. So all of that starts at waveprotocol.org. You can get the specifications there. Right now, there's only two pieces that are actually specification-like written down. There's several other white papers. And coming up, you're going to see some evolution of that as far as deciding what pieces become specs, what pieces just become position papers, things like that. So there's a lot of work to do there. And as we go through this, you're going to see the technology stack is fairly deep. So why Federation, right? I mean, we could have just built a wave server, stood it up, invited people, join in, and that could have been a fairly decent product on its own. But it would have been a bad thing to do, right? Because if we had done that, then a bunch of other people would have put up their own instances of wave-like servers, and you would have ended up with fragmentation, right? The second thing is to encourage adoption, right? If we have and work with the open community, and it gets adopted as a standard protocol, and there's open APIs for interacting with these things, then there's no lock-in, right? You want to use Wave? Go ahead, use Wave. You can use our Wave provider, or you can use somebody else's Wave provider. So we're hoping that, you know, it's an aspect of increasing adoption of the system by making it open. And in that vein, just announced this morning was at the Enterprise 2.0 conference was Novell Pulse. So Novell announced that they have Pulse delivered as a service and then later available for on-premise deployment. It'll work seamlessly with Google Wave, so you and anyone you want to work with can have your choice and get down to business. So it's a collaboration environment, again, like Wave, but they've decided to adopt the Federation protocol, and so when they deliver their service, it'll interoperate with Google Wave. And that's exactly the kind of things we wanted to see when we started working on the Federation protocol. So, technical background, diving into the details. Here in one picture is the entire model of what gets manipulated. And there's a lot of pieces in here, so we'll go over it slow. Wave is actually kind of a misnomer in that you say, okay, I'm gonna start a wave with you, right? Unfortunately, what we view a wave is as kind of like a container for all of the wavelets, and the wavelets are actually the conversations. And actually, that's not even quite true, but we don't even go into that level of detail. So the wavelet really is the conversation, right? And it's contained within Wave, and the Wave is basically all of the wavelets on your server that you're hosting. So inside each individual wavelet are the list of participants, whoever's involved in that conversation, and then there are documents. Now those documents, here it says it's an XML document. I will clarify that. It's an XML-ish document. And we'll get into that in a little more detail. So it's an XML-ish document and annotations. And those are actually held separately in there. So you have wavelets, you have the participants, you have these documents. You can have multiple documents in a wavelet. You get multiple participants in a wavelet. And different annotations for those XML-like documents. So here is an example of a document that you would see in a wavelet. Now I've represented it here as XML because it's easier to think of it that way, but realize that it is not XML. So there's a begin body and an end body. There's a begin line, there's an end line, and the words hello. So a document is really just a linear stream of items. And any item can be a Unicode code point, like H-E-L-L-O and the exclamation point, or it can be a begin element or an end element. Body, zero, the zeroth point is a begin element. So is line, then there's an end line, and you see I've subscripted them here. So like I said, it's a linear sequence. This document is a sequence of 10 items. Okay, I can count from zero, really I can. So, item zero is a body. Item one is a line element. Item 2 is that end of line element. Item 3 is an H, Unicode code point. As we get further on and we look at operational transforms, we'll see that the operational transforms that work on these basically look at this as a linear stream. So items can either be elements, begin or end elements, or they can be Unicode code points. The begin elements may have attributes, key value pairs associated with it. In this case, the one at the 1th position, the line has a key value pair, an attribute T with a value of H3. So it kind of looks like XML, right? Except it's not really, because the characters you could use for element names and attribute values are well beyond what XML allows. There's no processing instructions, there's no doc type, things like that. So it shares a large subset with XML and can be serialized similar to it, but it goes beyond that. So that's what a document looks like. So you can imagine that I could have, this is kind of the beginning of a conversation. I've typed hello in there. So that's a document. Annotations are another set of key value pairs that work over that sequence. So in this case, I have an annotation which says set the font size to bold on items 3 through 7. So that would be H-E-L-L-O. So when this gets displayed, the annotation says display those as bold. And there's all kinds of annotations that are handled in the system. They don't just have to be related to style. Some of the annotations record user IDs. Some of the annotations record where the person's cursor is at any moment in time as they move through the document. So there's a lot of different uses for annotations beyond just styling, but the easiest one to grasp is this. So that's the Wave data model, or the document model. So those are those documents that sit inside wavelets, right? And the important thing to remember is that the wavelet is the unit of concurrency, right? Those are the things that we're going to be manipulating, and those are the things where you see that live interaction occurring from. It comes from doing operational transforms, right? So you will load up your Wave client, I'll load up my Wave client, we're working on the same document. Let's just presume somehow we synchronize with each other and you end up with the document and I end up with the document and now we start typing. Now the server has to kind of disambiguate between the changes you make and the changes I make so that we both end up back at the same document, because you can be typing at the same exact time as I can, right? That's done through OT, operational transforms. And those OTs operate on the wavelet level. The wavelet is also, because that's where the operational transforms take place, is also the unit of federation. Those are the things that we're going to be talking about when we say, all right, I'm going to federate, which means what? Federation means you and I can communicate on a shared wave conversation, in this case a wavelet. What does that mean? That means we're going to be both manipulating that document on the wavelet level together. So federation means, I'm getting ahead of myself, sharing wavelets, right? The wave servers run operational transforms, and then the servers share the updates of those wavelets. So let's look at operational transforms. So let's just assume we have these common strings, A, B, C, D, E. I'm a person, I have one of those. You are running your Wave client. We have a document, both are shared. We both have A, B, C, D, E. Okay, we both synchronized somehow. We won't worry about how we got to the synchronized point yet. Let's just presume we're synchronized. Now, you can start editing that document. And let's say I edited and I deleted the D out of my document, and you edited it and deleted character two. You deleted the B, right? Our documents are now out of sync. So now we need to synchronize them together. Operational transforms is a way of the server to take my changes and your changes, coordinate them together, and then send back those changes as basically they cross in the mail. I get an operation that actually makes sense for me. All right, so my deletion, my operation was to delete the D. That's delete character 4. That goes off to the server. When it gets to you, the server sees you've already deleted character 2. So that actually becomes a changed operation for you. It says delete character 3. That's the operational transform taking place. It takes my operation that I did, looks at all of the changes you've done, and then hands you a new modified operation, a transformed operation, that makes sense for your document. Same thing with your change. You deleted character 2, which is a B. That comes over to me. It's still a delete the character 2, because your deletion was afterwards. It was further down in the sequence, so it doesn't need to change. So if we both then apply those transformations, we end up at the same place, ACE. Okay? That's all the operational transforms guarantee at the basic level, is that we're going to end up in the same place. Right? You could type foo, and I could type bar, and if we start at the same place and our characters intersperse, it's not going to make a word. But we're both going to end up with foo and bar with interlaced characters. Right? The point is that we end up with the same place. It doesn't necessarily make sense. The only thing the operational transforms guarantee is that that tree-like structure that occurs, because it's an XML-like document, that's always preserved. Okay? Okay, I should have advanced my slide because this explains it. So CNS are client and server. Client makes a change, server makes a change. That's what those are. So you can see there, the nodes diverge, right? My state and the client state and server state diverge. There's this function called transform, which looks at the operations that were done on the client and the server and says, okay, here's how you're going to fiddle them around so that they both make sense. And now it changes the server operation into S prime, changes the client operation C into C prime. Now, when the client uses the server's transformed operation, he ends up back at the same state as the server applying the transformed client's operation. So, same thing all over again. We just want to end up back at the same shared state. That's what the operational transform is guaranteeing us. So, this diagram is just showing that the operations compose. So if I have A, B, and if we design the operations and the transform function correctly, we can get them to compose. So A of B, I apply A operation, then I apply B. I'm traveling down the length of that. That's the client side. Server side could apply X. Now I can compose those together and shorten up that transform. Right? So you can actually make multiple changes, and there's a way to compose those operation, those changes and then transform them. That greatly simplifies the operations that occur. If you go back to the original paper where all this came from, this isn't very new stuff. Operational transforms came out of a paper on the Jupyter networking system, which created a collaborative system like this. I think it was back in 1985. I don't know the exact date of the paper. They actually did not have this composability problem. They didn't actually have this composability feature in it. So it ended up so that the client and the server could actually get fairly far apart, and the client and the server had to both traverse this giant matrix, the lattice, of all the operations. And you could always get from one lattice point to the next, but it took a long time, took a lot of operations to get. You had to basically fill out the entire lattice to get back to a shared state. Saying that your transformations are composable allows you to simplify that. So here's what the would look like if you didn't have composability. That is, you would have to walk down this entire transformation tree. If there's M and N transformations, then it's M by N operations. If you do it right, you can get that down to N log N, and that's what we've done. So there we go. We've got N log N. So the operations come in as a stream of operations. So there's an example operations, a list of example operations there. So when you get an operation, it operates on the entire stream. And all of the operations that you're sending to me are considered to be ordered. So one operation could say, skip forward 8 items. And remember, items could be either beginner end elements or it can be Unicode code points. Here, the second operation there is to insert a start element with a tag name of li. Next operation is to insert 5 characters, hello, insert an element end, skip 8 more characters, delete 3 characters. Those are all operations that get queued up, that are sent around. The composer then, this is what happens on the server, right? If multiple people are editing a document, the streams of operations are brought in, the composer basically zips them together in the right order so that they become a single stream. And the transformer works by saying, okay, I'm gonna take a client and a server stream, compose them together, and then transform them, and then send them back out as operations back out to you. Again, that whole delete the second character, delete the fourth character, they get modified and get sent back out to you. So, back to federation. So now that's kind of an underlying view of what is the model that we're working on when we talk about federating out these wavelets and the conversations. So federation begins when I have a conversation, a wavelet, and I add somebody from outside my domain to it. That triggers federation. Everything I've talked about so far could occur in the same server, right? I'm just sending operations to the server, they're sending it back to my client, those transforms occur. Now, I'm talking about federation. If I add somebody from outside my domain, I now want to start taking those operations and pushing them out over the network, right? So now when I want to do that, I have to start talking about standards, and I have to start talking about doing those things in an interoperable way. So the federation system that we've built layers on top of already existing technologies. Right? The first one it layers on top of is XMPP. It's already existing standard, it's out there, it's deployed, it works. So a wave server is an XMPP server. And when federation layers on top of that, it is just another service inside an XMPP server. So I'm gonna start off federation by adding a participant. I had the add participant operation. So if somebody, if David is on googlewave.com, starts a wavelet, adds Hannon at acmewave.com, now the server knows, okay, I have to begin federation. I have to go out to acmewave.com and see if it's a legitimate wave server, and track down Hannon and add that person to this conversation. So Bob at AcmeWave adds Milton at inatechcorp.com. So Bob's client sends the add participant. AcmeWave looks up inatech.corp.com's wave server. It does that by using just simple XMPP server discovery. Right? There's nothing new there. It's standard XMPP. Once it gets into the XMPP, it starts doing XMPP disco, service discovery, looking for a wave server. Once it finds the wave server, it starts pushing, it initially starts by pushing the add participant operation, gets added to the server. I'm adding that wavelet. After that, initcorp.com requests the wavelet history. So it built into the federation protocol is this idea that there's all these document mutations that occur to change this document. The only thing at line 3 that the Initech server has seen is add participant. So now it knows there's a wave, a participant's been added to that wave, it knows it doesn't know anything about that wave, so it goes back out over XMPP and pulls in the entire history. So this is kind of the federation flow, right? And you can see the line there is XMPP, this is how we transport things around. So AcmeWave has a wave server, and there's two parts to that. There's the federation host and a federation remote. And obviously there's the wave client, which could be anything. All right, it could be a HTML client like Google has. We also demonstrated kind of a plain text client, and I'll show that live in a minute. There's two parts here. There is sending updates on a local wave as part of federation. So when document mutations come in to a wavelet, they get sent out over the federation host to a federation remote. Same thing in reverse order for updates for remote waves. So the simple part here is that the data stays on your network if it's a local wave, right? Wavelets don't start traveling around until they're federated, until you start adding other people. So let's start looking at let's keep going with that. All right. So the layers that occur here, so there's, like I said, XMPP is the layer at which this stuff is being transported over. The Wave server is just another service using standard XMPP service discovery on top of that specific type Wave server. The mutations are packaged up and obviously sent over XMPP. But one of the things that was important with this is, you know, you're sending mutations from one location to another. You kind of want to know that that person really said that, right? You're talking about modifying these documents. Just accepting any old mutation from anybody who claims to be that person is obviously going to be a problem. So what happens is all of the mutations are signed with certificates, right? So as you get in mutations that build up these documents, they're all signed from whoever that remote person is. Built into the protocol is the ability to go out and when you get mutations that you do not understand, if they're signed with a certificate you don't know, part of the federation protocol is to go back to that originating server and say, okay, send me the certificate. All right, so from a systems perspective, what's going on here is that there's these document mutations. So you're going to have to store all these mutations so you can build up the document, keep that over time. They're signed so that you know that they haven't been changed along the way. Also, that what needs to be stored with them is obviously you need to cache the certificates that they were signed with so you can verify that they were there. So progress to date. So far, we've published two draft specifications. The first one is the Google Wave Federation Protocol, and let me bring that up here. Wave Protocol, here are the draft protocol specifications. There is the Google Wave Federation Protocol. This defines the architectural overview, gives you the details on what the documents are, what the protocol specifics are, and on the signatures that go along with it. The next one is the Wave Conversation Model. Before I said that Wave Conversations looked like a single wavelet, and that actually is it's mostly the case, right? So in order to actually have a conversation within Wave, you kind of need a little more structure. You can't just have one document that's associated with it. The Wave Conversation Model defines what the document types are, what the allowed XML-like structures are going to look like, and how those need to work together. So, like I said, it's two parts to this as far as the protocol is concerned. There is the open source code and the specifications. So the open source code so far is an implementation, roughly, of what's in the specifications. It is not a reference implementation at this point. It's just a basic prototype client server in an early crypto library. The code, roughly 40,000 lines of Java code. It's Apache 2 licensed. Two components really is, one is the Java code that does the Wave model, that does the operational transforms, and the second part is the prototype client and server and the crypto library for it. So Fed1 is what we call the Java open source library. It is an executable spec for the wire protocol, like I said, not the beginning of a reference implementation. Coming in the future, and I think I'll actually get back down to that. We will be open sourcing the lion's share of our implementation of Google Wave. There's a lot of work to be done internally to improve it to the point where we're happy with it, and we believe the spec is settling down. And then obviously preparing to open source it and disentangling that code from our underlying services and technologies underneath. So that will take a while, but that is the goal, is to open source the lion's share, which includes the HTTP front end and the Wave serving infrastructure on the back end. So like I said, the idea is that it's a protocol and you can connect to it regardless of what the user interface is. You don't have to use our interface. This is actually a text-driven command line interface, Wave client that we also shipped with the Fed1 code, and I can demonstrate that in a bit. So it's not just that one tied to that one GUI. So things we're currently working on, we are opening up a federation port on wavesandbox.com. That just happened earlier this week. We opened that up. And so now people in the outside world, including Novell and other folks, are able to open up, run their own servers, run the Fed1 code, and interoperate with Sandbox, Wave Sandbox. So there's actually two instances out in public of Google Wave right now. There's the developer preview, which you have to have a fairly high pain threshold to use. It is a developer product. We can look at that right here. Okay, so this is the Wave, you see Google Wave, developer preview. You probably don't see many Google products with a debug menu. Really, really is a developer preview for what's going on. This is the system that the Federation port has been opened on, and this is the one that if today you want to go out, download the code, start it running, get certificates, you can hook up and start interoperating with this Wave server. We'll see that in a minute. Still highly experimental, still a very fast-moving target, lots of changes to the code. And this is a learning experience for us in running an open port and a learning experience for everybody working on the protocol to see how it goes. So we're up, like I said, we're updating the client server code. And that client is that text client. And the server is being updated to understand the new conversation manifest. The other thing we've done just this week is also published a Google Wave contributors license agreement. So up until before this week, we weren't actually accepting any contributions to the code from outside. We've now got our contributors license agreement through legal. It's now out. You can sign up and participate in the community. So, this is where the demo goes. Okay. This, like I said, is the Wave Sandbox. Right, this is the developer preview. This is where if you were a developer, and not just somebody interested in playing with Wave, but interested in building pieces on top of Wave, this is the account you would get. This is where you would go to use it. So I can use a new Wave here, start a new Wave. I can start a new conversation. Hi there. Okay, it's actually kind of fairly boring talking to myself. But what you can see here is using this, now I've got add another person to the conversation. Dan's in Australia, so I don't think he's going to actually talk to me. Show all wavelets. Okay, it's got a debug interface. And so what the cool part about this is you can actually now see. Remember those wavelets and all of the abstract concepts I was talking about? Probably should have come over here a little earlier. So inside this conversation, there are two wavelets, right? The first one is conversation plus root. That's the actual text you're gonna see on the screen, right? That has a document ID, it has an author, it has a list of contributors, and it has the content. And now you can see doc, body, line, line, there's hi there. That's what I typed. It's in that XML format that I typed. There are other documents in there. So that's one document. Remember, we talked about that as being an XML type document plus annotations. The conversation is actually another document. So the first thing there starts with B plus. That's actually a blip. And so when I start having a conversation with myself, how do you? All right, so when I have a conversation with myself, these two individual pieces, and this piece here, the individual pieces there are called blips. Each one of those are actually individual documents, and I can see that here on the screen, show all wavelets. So now I have multiple blips. Those are the first three things in that list that start with B. All right, there's hi there, there's hi to you is the next document, and the third one is yo. So those are three individual documents. So when I apply operational transforms to wavelets and then documents, that is what the document is. That's what it looks like. So this conversation can be composed of multiple documents. The fourth document in the list is a conversation. That's a higher level document that actually kind of controls the flow of those things, controls the layout, how they're related to each other. And inside there, you can see it just basically references what the blips are and the order that they're in and how they should be displayed. There's lots of other documents that are in here that we haven't currently documented and or may or may not be used. Tags, spelling correction. Down below is another wavelet. All right. Once you have this idea of a document and I can start manipulating it and it's available, but I can do concurrent operations to it, all of Google Wave, and by Google Wave I mean the interface that we've built, starts to build up and use lots of documents. Because anytime you need to store data, well, we'll just store it in a document. So down here is a user wavelet. All right? This is my personal information. So this wavelet nobody else can see, only I can see it. And it keeps track of information for me, such as what I've read. What are the blips that I have read? So as you notice, when I type a new blip, there was a little green bar next to it. After I've seen it, it gets marked as red. So those are the show all wavelets. So that's read and unread, and there's even more things that you don't see in here as far as there being annotations for where my cursor is, where the selection is. If I do a selection on something, that will actually show up as an annotation on that document that only the server sees. In all of this, though, if you go through all the documentation, you won't actually find a description of where the final document gets transmitted, because it doesn't. Everything is always transmitted as those operations, right? So when you're a client or another server, you actually don't say, give me this wavelet document. What you do is you say, give me all the operations that occurred to build up that document, then you build up your own internal representation however you need to do that. The nice part about that is it lets you do playback. And you can step through the document mutations as they occur and re-see how that wavelet evolved. Right? But there are extensions. So let me add the chess gadget to it. Did I mention it was a developer preview? Oh. All right. Let's get out of playback. Now let's add the extension. There we go. Okay. So I can add a chess gadget to it. So on top of the Federation protocol and completely orthogonal to the Federation protocol and federating these. There is three different APIs on top of this for how to build extensions to it. One of it is a gadget API. And this works like the Google Open Social gadgets on top of it. The interesting part is how it interacts with Wave. So I'm going to make changes. I'm going to play this game. All right, I'm going to play the game. He goes, I go. I wish I knew what openings were. Okay, so we go through that. The data for the gadget is stored as a document. The changes that you and I make as we play chess are mutations to that document. That means they're also available for playback. So not only do you see the gadget being added, the individual moves of the chess game are in the playback. Right. So now you can see some of the possibilities of Wave, not just as a chat platform, but if you have data that sits underneath an application that you use that looks tree-like, XML-ish, right, then think about ways that you could expose that data to Wave and get the benefits. Right? Because if you have now that XML-ish data and you expose it and federate it out over, then you allow multiple people to manipulate that document at one time. Here it's a simple thing, which is just a list of chess moves, but you can imagine a lot of different, more complex structures that are amenable to taking that data, putting it in a Wave, allowing multiple people to edit, and it's always in a consistent state on both ends. So that's that part of the Wave. What I've got here running back at the house is a copy of Fed1. This is the Fed1 code that's running. It's the Java open source code running. I've got it hooked up to the Procity, I hope I'm saying that right, Procity XMPP server. I changed that out. I was using OpenFire. We've had people use eJabberDee. It runs, we've done as little work as we could. I mean, it's part of not just being lazy, it's reusing what's already there. So the code we ship isn't an XMPP server. It just conforms to what an XMPP extension would be, and it talks to the server over the standard ZEP protocol, which I can't remember the name at the time, the number. So it just runs as a Wave extension, XMPP extension. So what I've got here then, so that's running in this window, and you can see the history from that. I run that, running in this other screen is the client. All right. So I just run the client, that says to run as me. This is running on the domain bitworking.net. So I can create a new Wave there, and then I can open that Wave, and I can start talking, all right? At this point, I can start doing add all right, so I did an add JC Gregorio at Wave Sandbox. So now the server's gonna go back out and using XMPP, go, oh, Wave Sandbox, who is that? All right, I'm gonna discover that's an XMPP server, good, I'm gonna find that, does it have a Wave service provided with it? Yes, okay, it does have a Wave service provided with it. So once I know it has that Wave service, I'm gonna start sending it mutations. And those mutations are gonna come from Joe at bitworking.net, because that's what I started up as, from my server, and they're gonna be to JC Gregorio at waveserver.com. Which is actually the development server that I was just showing you. And then the user, that then starts recreating this Wave lit, this Wave conversation, which already exists on my server, now gets duplicated over to the developer sandbox. And now me, talking to me again, but now through lots of technology, across servers, I can now communicate between those two Wave servers. So, the demo gods are with me, there's that conversation. So now I can talk back to myself. Hello. And if we go back over here and look at the client, there's the hello that got added back in. So this is talking to our publicly facing, or at least to the developer community, Wave servers. We probably don't want to try to look through the. I thought we could get a little shot. As you can see, it prints out what's going on. There's a wavelet update that's going through. So these are the XMPP messages that are being sent back and forth. I can't really show you anything really good. So part of the reason you're going to see there, actually, you see a lot of hex, right? That's actually base64 encoded data. One of the issues that we ran into with this is that we said that the changes you send around are going to be signed. If you sign something, it can't change. This is where XML suddenly becomes a liability, right? Because it does change. I can take an XML document and re-serialize it in lots of different ways. In theory, it's the same thing. Now, one of the solutions to that is canonical XML. And if you know XML and I say canonical XML, you'll get that pain right between your eyes because it's a pain to work with. So it's also, you know, XML. And it's not very widely implemented. It's also not terribly compact. It doesn't really matter because we're working on XMPP. So what you're seeing there actually is a base64 encoded protocol buffer. So protocol buffer is another internal piece of Google technology that we open sourced, I think about 2 years ago. Allows for a very compact representation of data and also a very fast way to extract the data from that binary representation. So we take those deltas are defined in terms of protocol buffers. Data is put into a protocol buffer, base64 encoded, along with the signature is encoded in that form, so the serialization will not change, and then those base64 encoded protocol buffers are what are transported back and forth over the XMPP messages. All of this, like I said, is actively evolving as we work on it. So let me get back to here, the demo. Okay, so where are we going forward? We're iterating towards stable specifications, and we're getting experience running an open federation port. So we're trying this, we think we've got good stuff. As we connect with people and add more federation partners, start working with companies like Novell, who will bring a set of expectations about what they want to be able to do to the system, that all feeds back into those specifications, and we're just going to keep going around with new versions of code, new versions of specs, feedback from the community, and keep working on that, and hopefully asymptotically converging to some stability point. So once things get stable enough, we will open up a federation port on wave.google.com. Now, wave.google.com is the public-facing community commercial preview. So wave.google.com is this one. And while we're waiting for it to load, I can tell you that Wave will push your browser in the way no other web application ever has. So they're working on that. Obviously, we want to get it running faster, but it is a very heavy weight, approximately 1 megabyte of JavaScript download to run the application on your desktop. Part of it comes from the very nice, smooth-looking interface, all built in GWT. The other part of that, though, is a lot of computation because the GUI front end does the operational transforms in there. So there's a lot of computation going on. Obviously no developer sticker on this, and obviously no debug menu for this version. So, and like I said, going forward, we want to open source the lion's share of Google's client and server and develop a production quality reference implementation, which is not what we have now. So, call for participation. We can't do this alone. You know, if we just shipped what we had today, that wouldn't be good. It might not work for everybody. We need everybody involved. We need more people involved. We need to know, you know, what your expectations for this are, feedback about how it works. What are the system requirements that we're putting on people to support this system? We want to work with the community. Waveprotocol.org is where that starts. groups.google.com is the mailing list where all those conversations take place. So all the conversations take place on Wave Protocol. We've got a code review instance out there, codereview.waveprotocol.org, where any changes to the code are publicly reviewed before they go into the code base. And like I said, we can now accept public contributions to it. So, end of my presentation. Open it up for questions.
You put this on for a second. Thank you. Before we start with the questions, I did want to mention that every attendee to the conference this year does have access to a Google Wave Sandbox invitation. And if you would like to play with this a little bit more, if you want to get a hold of that invitation, www.usenix.org/Google Wave. And if you look on the event website, you'll also find a link to that in there somewhere. So questions, go ahead.
Hi, Joe. I'm Dave Planka from the University of Wisconsin. I was curious early on in the proposal for developing the Google Wave this way as a hosted conversation on a server, or even with a federation, there's a small set of servers that federate with each other in the clients or second class. Were there any exploration of making it completely peer-to-peer so that once that reference server code is there, that it's actually out on the clients, and then we see all the clients talk to each other directly, which is more like what SMTP was in the past. It doesn't, you know, it can go back to other servers, and it's not really reliant on a specific service.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't involved in the very early discussions about Google Wave. I joined the team about a year ago. So whether there was a discussion about peer or not, I have no idea. So can't really fill you in on kind of the technical decisions that went in.
Is there anything about the way it's structured now that would keep all the clients from being their own, I guess, what Wave service?
You do need a single server that is the one doing the transform to decide. Because the like I said before, there was a change from what the Jupyter system was, in that we had all the operations must compose, right? That was one change. The other change, which I didn't mention, is the fact that before, a client could just send in a stream of updates as fast as they came. The way we've changed the protocol now is the client sends an operation to the server. The server accepts at most one operation from every client, composes them together, and says, okay, here's your changes back out. Apply those before you send me your next update. And then the client applies those changes, does its own operational transform, and sends the next step in. So there has to be a centralized server, which is basically doing lockstep, serializing the transforms it's getting from all the clients, and doing the transforms and sending those back out.
Okay, thanks. So.
Hi, I'm Ari Rabkin from UC Berkeley. I wanted to ask about the cryptography side of this. You mentioned that all the messages are signed and that everybody has a certificate. What does that certificate certify, right? If my grandmother wants to join this, does she need someone to prove her identity, or does the certificate make a somewhat weaker claim?
The certificate sits on the server. Right. So how the client talks to the server at this point is unspecified. So we haven't started work on a client-server protocol. We don't know if we're going to work on a client-server protocol. There's people in the community that have stepped up and said, yeah, we believe a client-server protocol is important for this. But as of right now, there's nothing out there that's written down that is a client-server protocol. So what happens is somehow the client tells the server to make these changes to the document. The server has the certificate and says, you know, it knows the client somehow, right? You know, we're not involved in that. But what we're saying is the server has signed this. And so when you start federating, you're saying, I have the cert for that server, and I know that those operations are coming in from it.
Just to follow up, this means, in other words, if I understand correctly, that I'm tied to a particular server, and that if I want to cut my ties to that server, I'm stuck because you guys have my private key, right?
That's a really good question. So what happens is, yes, there's going to be all these documents. How you go about backing up those documents and moving them when they are signed and if that key goes with you or not is a good question, and is part of the discussion that's occurring in the Federation protocol.
Hi, Chris Allison, Brandeis University. You mentioned that the early idea for creating Google Wave was how would email be created if it were created today? I've also heard Google Wave compared to instant messaging and wikis. As any of us who have ever used email or instant messaging or wikis as end users, never mind running the servers, know abuse is rampant, spam, viruses, malware, etc. Is there any thought, has there been any discussion about dealing with potential abuse in the system? Is the plan to have it be whitelist-based and I choose to federate with you and accept your certificate and everyone else has to go to hell? Or is there some other thinking in there for dealing with abuse?
There's certainly work that needs to be done on the abuse side, right? And we know that, and actually there's a white paper that's going to be coming out talking about that. And one of the base parts is the fact that that kind of puts you in a better position is at least those operations are signed, right? And so you do have a certificate, and so you can say, okay, I'm not going to trust anybody with, you know, from that domain anymore. That domain is producing spam, and that way you can stop all the operations from there and look for them. So, yeah, it's a good question. Work needs to be done on it. There's things that are in place that are actually, you know, make me believe we're starting at a higher level, at least. We've got some tools in place there as far as you know where these operations are coming from and there's certificates associated with them. But yeah, it's a good.
Semi-related follow-up. Do you know if there is any input drawn from Dan Bernstein's Internet Mail 2000 proposal for design of this?
No idea.
Thank you.
Sorry. I just wanted to follow up on one of the things. The accounts you would get when you got with Wave would be sandbox accounts. So if you sign up, you too can have a debug menu.